Welcome to Hot Spots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello, and welcome to Hotspots. I'm so glad you're here. I'm recording this episode in Reykjavik, Iceland, where I'm attending the Arctic Circle Assembly. The Arctic Circle Assembly is an international gathering of several thousand people from around the Arctic and around the world, government representatives, scientists, indigenous people, industry, NGOs. And one of those participants, Jim Gamble, is my guest today. Jim is the Senior Director of Pacific Environment's Arctic Program, and it's my honor to work with Jim on the Arctic team. Jim, tell me a little bit about the work Pacific Environment is doing.
Thanks, Kay. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Pacific Environment works broadly in the world. We are a small NGO with global reach. We have programs that encompass Arctic, as we're speaking about now, but also climate from a shipping maritime perspective, plastics from a keeping plastic out of the ocean perspective. We have a marine program that deals with marine protected areas, primarily now working in Southeast Asia, but expanding across the globe as we try to protect 30% of the world's oceans by 2030.
In this podcast today, we're going to be discussing the climate crisis, the Arctic meltdown, and the implications of that for the rest of the world. As we've heard here in Reykjavik from scientists, the Arctic is warming at an unprecedented and alarming level, four times faster than elsewhere in the world. The Arctic meltdown is happening more rapidly than was previously thought, and that's having global implications. Sea ice is at its lowest extent ever, and the devastating effects of climate change have never been more evident than in the aftermath of Typhoon Heilong that recently blew through western Alaska, causing massive catastrophic flooding and destruction. More than 1,800 people were evacuated in two villages, Kipnik and Kwiglakuk, known as Kwig, were completely destroyed with no homes now safe for habitation. 15 villages suffered substantial damage, and altogether 49 villages suffered damage, some with as much as 25% of the homes now unlivable. Pacific Environment is part of a coalition of NGOs, the Clean Arctic Alliance, and we understand that the melting Arctic, the snow and the ice and the glaciers has reached a crisis point, and that we need urgent action to start addressing this complicated situation. Jim, how is maritime shipping contributing to the climate crisis?
Shipping contributes in a few ways. Obviously, one is that shipping produces a tremendous amount of CO2. Shipping, if it was a country, would be between Germany and Japan. In other words, about the fourth largest producer. That's just CO2, and there's much more to it than that. Shipping also produces particulate matter pollution, especially black carbon, which people know as soot. And in the Arctic, soot is especially bad because it settles on snow and ice, increases the melting, and rapidly contributes to snow and ice melt, exposing the dark surfaces underneath and absorbing even more heat. So shipping in the Arctic is particularly important because of this particulate matter pollution. It needs to be addressed urgently.
We talk about the triple planetary crisis of pollution, biodiversity loss, and climate change. How do these crises interrelate, and what are we doing to try to resolve them?
Yeah, triple planetary crisis is important because pollution, biodiversity loss, and climate change all feed and add to each other. If we address pollution, it helps, but unless we address the other factors as well, we're not going to give the planet enough of a respite to recover from these problems. They're all produced by various means. So concentrating on shipping, we can address all three. And shipping produces a tremendous amount of pollution. shipping, as we've discussed before, contributes to climate change because of the emissions of black carbon and CO2 and methane in some cases. And shipping contributes to biodiversity loss because via noise and via physical disturbance, shipping interferes with marine life all the way from phytoplankton to the largest whales and everything in between. So we can address all three of those by working on the shipping industry.
How does the loss of sea ice and glacier melt affect the global climate?
This affects the climate in a number of ways. Of course, as the ice melts, it contributes more fresh water into the marine system. And that's important because of the sort of the delicate balance between fresh and salt water that produces currents that bring warm water north and take cold water south. So these currents can be interrupted, and we're seeing that now in the Gulf Stream. Also, as snow and ice melt, the warmer surfaces underneath are exposed, and so you have this positive feedback loop, and it just increases warming more and more as ice and snow disappear. And then you can think of the Arctic as a global climate regulator in the sense that it acts almost like an air conditioning system, cooling the rest of the planet. And so as the Arctic warms, the planet warms much more quickly. And you can think of it as more energy in the system. As things warm, there's more energy. That's why we're seeing bigger storms. That's why we're seeing more amplified effects as climate change worsens.
Is sea level rise affected by what's happening in the Arctic?
Yeah, absolutely. The Arctic Ocean ice, as it disappears, it's already floating, so it doesn't have an effect. But the big effect is the Greenland ice sheet. The Greenland ice sheet is a tremendous amount of ice, and it's been estimated that should the Greenland ice sheet disappear entirely, you would be looking at more than a meter of sea level rise. And that is incredible because it would put so many low-lying coastal areas underwater. It's a tremendous problem.
In addition to the climate issues and problems, we have the health impacts, human health impacts. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. This is really important because people that live near ports or live along shipping routes, they're exposed to a tremendous amount of pollution, in particular, particulate matter pollution. And particulate matter pollution like black carbon, but other parts of these particles that are given off by ships, they have a lot of fundamental health impacts, such as increasing asthma, increasing cardiovascular disease, increasing respiratory disease. You just see people sicker that live close to these sources of pollution. So cleaning them up has a tremendous impact on human health.
And how are local communities and people who rely on subsistence affected by these changes?
Yeah, if you look at indigenous peoples who have been, their food security is tied into subsistence for millennia. Everything that interferes with these species that they rely on affects their food security, but not just their food security, because their whole culture is affected by subsistence and the fact that they rely on these animals for food security. So this is really important because as shipping or any factor interferes with these sea creatures, it can interfere with their breeding, their mating, their calving, interfere with their migration from place to place. And when that is interfered with, it weakens the animals. They have to work harder to do what they need to do. And it's a very fundamental issue that can affect a lot of elements of the food chain, all the way down to the smallest animals.
Right now, the International Maritime Organization, the IMO, where Pacific Environment works to try to achieve positive change, has backslid by failing to adopt the proposed net zero framework that has been under discussion for quite a while and was due to get a final vote recently and failed. It got postponed, but what is the net zero framework and how is that going to reform the shipping industry?
The net zero framework is a mechanism by which shipping can go from where they are now all the way to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. So it's the timeline. It's the various goals along the way at 2030 and 2040. It's what fuels are zero carbon fuels, what fuels are near zero. It defines all those things. And so that's really important. The mechanism has to start so that we can start this process.
And what happened in the lead up to the vote? Why did it get rejected? And what was the role of the United States?
That's an important and fundamentally disappointing question. The United States, leading up to this point, has really been a leader. They have been a consensus builder. They have been very productive in suggesting a way forward. Since the new administration, they have turned around 180 degrees. The net zero framework was built over many years of work to reach consensus on a process that countries would agree with. But now the United States has come in, and not just the United States, but others, Saudi Arabia for one, United Arab Emirates. They have come in and said that the framework is too damaging to shipping. It'll raise prices too much, and it should be, there should be more time to look at the consequences of the framework itself. The consequences have been examined very thoroughly, and we know essentially what the consequences will be. But the United States, Saudi Arabia, and others who are protecting the fossil fuel industry are doing all they can to stop this.
So as you look at the overall situation with the climate crisis and the inaction of the regulatory body, the IMO, what gives you hope that we can make progress?
I'm glad you asked me that too, Kay, because there is hope. There's a number of issues that we're still working on that are still in the works. The net zero framework has been tabled for a year, and that's very disappointing. But there's other issues that are continuing to be worked on. And as all of us, we can make our wishes known to our elected leaders. This is important to us. We want the United States to be positive and work on it positively. Now, it might seem a difficult wall to climb, but every voice that advocates for change in this space makes a difference. And reach out to organizations that you trust and believe in. Pacific Environment is made up of a lot of people who contribute time, who contribute funds, who contribute in a number of ways. And every little bit of that contribution helps us to push the bar a little further in the direction of change and in the direction of cleaning up the planet.
So do individual people make a difference to the decision makers at the IMO? Who are the decision makers at the IMO?
At the IMO, it tends to be divided into sort of two groups of people. One are technical experts that understand shipping, understand how it works, understand how we can make these changes. But the other group tend to be bureaucrats who deal more with the system and less with the actual shipping industry. The problem is that bureaucrats often respond to various motivations. Sometimes the most important thing to them is lowering prices. Sometimes it's getting reelected. And so that can really interfere with progress moving forward. So one of the things, though, that also means is that they often respond to public pressure. And so if a bureaucrat within the system believes that their boss might be under threat at time of reelection, that could definitely make a change in the way they approach these problems.
The Paris Accord set a goal of keeping the warming under 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to industrial times. And it seems like we have come close to or already exceeded that benchmark. What are the consequences of continued failure to get with the program and address the situation? It just seems like the leadership of the world has gotten distracted by a lot of other things, and that climate issues have receded in importance, and that people are just not feeling the urgency of the situation. Do you sense that as well? And what do you think we can do to raise awareness and increase the sense of urgency?
The Paris Accord is important. Those numbers, 1.5 degrees or 2.5 degrees, they're not just pulled out of thin air. They're based on a lot of science that tells us that if the temperatures increase past those points, we're going to go past a tipping point. And what is a tipping point? It's something that you can't get back from easily. And a very good example of a tipping point is Arctic melt. If the Arctic melts, it'll be millennia before it comes back. And so everything we can do to prevent us getting past that tipping point, that helps. Now, you're right. There's an element of geopolitics here. Issues become important. They recede in importance based on a number of factors. But I think there's a couple of things. Bad news at the IMO can drive change elsewhere. Countries that are committed to change, they'll work on other things that will also reduce the pressure on the planet from climate change. There are opportunities to continue to work on this. We've had one setback. but that setback might drive change in other places and we might be able to get where we need to go. It's really important that we work on this in the next 3 to 5 years. They're critical. And so that's why we're really concentrating on these issues now.
Thank you so much, Jim, for visiting with me today. As we've been discussing, it's really urgent to get something done about the Arctic meltdown, which is rapidly accelerating. Unchecked black carbon emissions from Arctic shipping represent a clear and present danger to the integrity of the Arctic's cryosphere and global climate stability, as well as the health and well-being of Arctic indigenous and coastal communities. Cutting black carbon emissions will result in immediate climate benefits that slow warming in the Arctic and improve public health. I hope you'll join us again next week for Hot Spots. Climate change is a huge problem, and it's going to take a movement to ensure that our leaders respond to the urgency of this situation. At United America Network, we're working to build a movement for a clean and healthy future, and we invite you to join us. Thanks for being here. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
You've been listening to Hot Spots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hot Spots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericanetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.